Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Get Focused Radio, a show designed to help you refocus when life gets in the way. It is Thursday, June 14th, and I'm your host, Kate Hennessy, coming to you live on what looks to be an absolutely beautiful sunny day. Our special guest today is Mary McDonough. Mary McDonough is best known for the 11 years she played Erin Walton on the hit series The Waltons. However, many recognize Mary as a respected voice with regards to women's health and especially body image issues. Among the many topics Mary discusses in her new book, Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Erin Walton, is her own struggle with body image, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and being diagnosed with lupus. As a result, she has become an expert on women's health issues, testifying before Congress on many occasions. Before we get started with my questions for Mary, I want to share with our listeners our call-in number so they can have the opportunity to call in with their questions. So that number is 1-646-200-3268 or toll-free 1-888-435-1293 and press 1. So without further delay, Mary, welcome to Get Focused Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. Little Erin is all grown up now.
Very, very much so.
Now, I know our listeners will want to talk. I want to talk about the book. I want to talk about the health issues. There's so much I want to talk about. I don't even know if I want to share you with listeners, but I might have to. But I do want you to tell us a little bit about being on The Waltons, one of the most successful TV shows. Tell us a little bit about what that was like.
Oh, it was amazing. Now, you know, all these years later, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary, and there's a big event. Yeah, 40th anniversary of the Waltons, and there's a big reunion event on September 29th in Los Angeles that's open to the public and stuff. It's on Facebook and online, and we are thrilled to, A, still be alive and be part of this, and the show is so amazing. It's such an honor, and it touches lives in a way that I am just constantly, you know, stunned by. People just share the most amazing stories of the show touching them. So it was a wild ride, and I was just lucky to be on it.
It really, you know what, it did. It touched so many people. I don't think there's anyone that you talk to or that I've spoken to that doesn't know or has a favorite. You know, oh, I loved, you know, Richard Thomas. I love John Boy. I love, everyone has a favorite on that show and someone that they really kind of felt similar, felt very warm to.
And, yeah, you know, yeah. If you're a tomboy, you were related to Mary Ellen and a writer with John Boy.
Yeah, you know, I was so touched too, Mary, by your book. I loved your book. Amazing things in there that you shared, and the fact that you shared certainly makes us feel very close to you. You know, you're very you're someone that people feel that they know, and I was touched also by the similarities of our lives. Of course, we have the Irish background. You're a McDonough. Uh-huh. I'm a Hennessy. You know, your lovely memories of your parents and your dad. Now, that's where ours are a little different. Your memories of your dad are very sweet, whereas mine, not so sweet, not a very nice man, very abusive. I thought all dads got up in the morning, poured vodka in their orange juice. So different start as a child. So he was certainly, because I think your father, that's the first man in your life. And if they tell you that you're useless, you're no good, you're stupid, that starts your self-image. Now, I know that self-doubt starts very early, as it did for you, not so much with your dad, but being a child actress, what was your emotional health like as a child?
It was tough for me as well. I mean, my dad was, as much as I tell lovely stories about him, there's some stories in the book, my dad was tough. And it was never enough. You know, I mentioned at one point I was a straight-A student. I was doing a show and on the volleyball team and a cheerleader, and somehow it just wasn't enough for my dad. It was always more, more, more. So that did affect my emotional balance. And then school, my second grade teacher also was very much about how I never looked right for her. I had stringy hair, and so that was very damaging to me. So when I started the show, I was very much about getting approval because I wanted my dad's approval and the nuns' approval and teachers. And so going into a place where I was already kind of emotionally rocky and being in a industry where it's all about people liking you, it did wreak a little havoc here and there.
Yeah, and now I remember you saying your mom was kind of she comes across a little bit aloof in the book, not an affectionate as perhaps your dad was.
Yeah, that's very true. My dad, yeah. I think, got his hugs from us. My mom was very, you know, she was the adult child of an alcoholic who beat her, so she wasn't very cuddly. And but she was lovely, and she found her way through all of that. But she sort of would rather didn't like conflict, didn't really want to know what was going on, and never allowed anybody to raise their voices in our house because of what she had gone through as a child.
Yeah, well, her story alone, which you tell in the book, is sad.
Yeah.
Very sad. And you can understand why she was a little bit more cold, a little more reserved than your dad, although your dad was a tough cookie.
He was a tough cookie, but very gregarious and really who, I mean, my brothers and I talk about how he is the one who really molded us because he was so out there and so, you know, with people and very much about being philanthropic and always giving back and counting your blessings and then, you know, join 10 nonprofit organizations.
Well, you know, you talk about when you started, it was really luck that you went on, you immediately were taken onto the show. You know, your hair had a lot to do with it, that gorgeous red hair, right? They were looking for a specific look and you had it.
Uh-huh.
And you were, you know, you were considered the pretty one on the show.
Uh-huh.
So where did the lack of feeling as we perceived you? You know, looking back and watching the show, I certainly thought that Erin Walton, because that's who you were, was beautiful, as did
Thank
most
you.
People. You know, we grew up watching you, and you were on Tiger Beat, right?
Yeah,
in there with Donnie and Marie.
Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, all of them. And so looking at you, one would think, well, she's got it. She's just got it going on. But you didn't.
No, because I think it's the illusion of, you know, we always, I do a workshop, and I do a lot of public speaking now called Body Branding, Getting Comfortable with the Skin You're In. And I'm a life coach, and I work with people on these issues every day. And I always caution people about, you know, don't judge a book. Yes, I was the pretty one and, you know, the makeup and the hair and the this and the that. But in being that, people assume that everything was really wonderful when, in fact, it was really difficult because I always had people talking about my weight and was I thin enough and why was I eating that? And, the you know, there's a certain pressure. And when I got to be a regular teenager going through what a normal body would be, I, you know, had a wardrobe woman say, have you gained more weight or can you fit into the same clothes from last season? And you know, hair people and publicists and people, you know, always, Erin was always in these beauty contests, but she always lost. And they always, you know, grandma would say, see, that's what you get for being vain. So it was kind of a mixed message for me as Erin and Mary of, you know, you're the pretty one, but people would whisper it to me like it was something that was really bad and it was going to hurt Judy and Cammie.
Right. And, of course, you had to be that combination because, I mean, trying to manage the pressures as you try to be Mary, not Erin, you know, mm-hmm. that had to be a whole other a continuous battle, right? Because when you left the set, now you're Mary, but you're still a teenager. You're still that same, you're still a girl, you're still a teenager, you still have the same self-doubts. I know that you certainly battled depression and insomnia around that time. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened during those later teenage years?
Yeah, I just withdrew into myself. I read a Harlequin romance novel almost every day. I never got asked out on dates, so I was always out reading and writing, you know, keeping my 4.0 average. And I didn't have a lot of friends. I withdrew into myself. I was very confused, and I was sad, and I knew that I couldn't cry all the time because I couldn't show up for work with really swollen eyes, but I would set a timer, and I would allow myself to cry for a certain amount of time every night, and then I would stop, and I would just be awake and sad, and eventually I started to journal, which I think saved my life, but my hair started to fall out. Of course, I mean, I started to get this rash on my head. And my parents took me to the doctor, and they said, "Is she stressed out about anything?" And my parents were, "No, she has a great life. She's on a TV show. It's great." But I had this rash, which was all in my hair, seborrheic dermatitis. And, of course, I wouldn't let it go on my face because then I would get in trouble for ruining the, you know, the set work.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did you – how long did the Waltons run? How old were you when you were finished?
I was 20.
You were 20. Okay.
Yeah.
So now you're no longer little Erin Walton. Now you're 20-year-old Mary McDonough.
Yeah.
Now what does she do?
now she goes
now what do you do?
Well, now it's the era of Dallas with, you know, big hair and big boobs and
big shoulder pads, which are awful on everybody. That was not a good look.
And I wanted to work as an actress. I wanted to continue, and I did not have big boobs. I did not really have big hair, but I could have. And I kept losing parts to, you know, we went blonde and booby for this. And I just wanted to work so bad, and the stigma of the show and being typecast as the, you know, all-American girl. And certainly the producers of the Waltons went on and did other shows, and nobody would, you know, Dallas being one of them, you know, and they would not, I could not get a reading or an audition. And I started to study acting really seriously and doing theater. And I couldn't break that mold of that girl next door. And in one horrible choice that I made was to think that if I got silicone gel breast implants and got big boobs, then I would work. And instead of working, I ended up getting very sick. And over the course of 10 years, just my health spiraled down, which didn't help my career at all either. I didn't look well, but I didn't know what was wrong with me. And eventually I was diagnosed with lupus.
Oh. Oh. Now, tell me, I just want you to go back a little bit. When you would go to an interview prior to the breast implants, did they specifically say to you, would they be that outright, or did you just not get the part and you didn't know why? Did you assume that that's why you didn't get the part?
Both. My agent would tell me, well, they went blonde and booby with that one. They wanted drop-dead sexy. They wanted really pretty for this part. They wanted sexy. They wanted, you know, I would get that specific feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. When you went to get the implants, when you spoke with your doctor, did you ask the questions that you think that you should have asked, or did you just say, yeah, sure, throw them in and let's go?
And I asked a lot of questions because it felt so unnatural to me. It seemed kind of fun in some ways because I was young, but it seemed so unnatural, and I was very frightened of it. And I didn't ask the information that we have now was suppressed then, so I don't think anybody knew the exact right questions to ask. But I did ask, you know, he said, you might not be able to breastfeed. And I thought, breastfeed? I don't even want children. Who cares?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was young. But, no, I did, you know, they said, oh, they'll last a lifetime. They'll never be a problem.
That's a lie.
total lie. We know that's not true now.
Yeah.
You know, he said, you will be buried in your coffin and you will still have these fabulous breasts that are, you know, perky and, you know, like 15-year-olds. So, you know, that wasn't true, and we know that now. But I did ask questions, and, you know, within 24 hours after having surgery, I broke out in this rash. And then over the course of 10 years, had all of these different health issues, which just nobody ever really connected to anything.
Right. And I think I want to make it really clear to our listeners that if a doctor ever does say to you that you will, you know, you're going to have that one set and then you're going to be put in your coffin at the end of 40 years or whatever and still have them. It is a lie because they don't last. Your body will sag, it does stuff, and you will have to go and have these surgeries over and over and over. And
yeah,
they're not fun. They're horrible. They're painful. It's a horrible thing. I do want to go on and talk to you a little bit about the lupus, but I want to read a part because I know that you made a decision to have the implants removed, and you still, it wasn't a cure-all. So you had the implants, and you would think then that would be fantastic, and I'm going to read this so that people really get what you're saying to us.
Uh-huh.
This is what it says in the book, Lessons from the Mountain, What I Learned from Aaron Walton. Quote, a dear friend of mine took a series of wet T-shirt photographs of me, not for a poster or publicity to boost my career, as a publicist suggested, just for me. I was really trying on my new silhouette, getting used to the attention. It was a try at sexy, a try at a new body, a new self-image. But trying is not being. Sexy is being connected to your inner beauty. Sexy isn't a costume you put on or a plastic device you put in your chest. Sexy is a feeling from within, a confidence and sense of oneself. I did not know that then. Unfortunately, with all the inner turmoil, I began to hide my new breasts. I was embarrassed that people would know what I did and judge me. I felt fake inside. The silicone didn't fill the hole in me. I just found that absolutely so poignant, and it says so much that it just didn't matter. It's the same as getting really skinny or, you know, changing your hair color, having implants. Uh-huh. If it's not going on the inside, you're still the same person. It's not working.
Yeah, because there was a hole inside of me, and I wasn't dealing with what was empty. I kept putting things into it, food, dating people that were not good for me, partying here and there, implants. And I kept just trying to address, the hole and cover it up. Until I really just had to go inside and realize that no matter what I do, no matter what people do, whether they tattoo or change their nose or fill up their lips or whatever it is, it's like, why?
Yeah.
Why was I doing this? And most of my revelation in that, and it's what I work with people on now all the time, is like why we make those choices. If we can make them and we're okay with it, then that's one thing. But if we're doing it for somebody else or some reason outside of yourself and thinking, if I do this, then I will be loved. If I do this, then that means I'm sexy. If
right.
I do this, I will get a husband or whatever it is we tell ourselves. It can be detrimental, and it doesn't address the real inner core issue.
Exactly. When you develop lupus, do you think that the lupus was hand-in-hand with the implants? Do you think that developing that had something to do with that? And what are the symptoms of lupus?
I actually do. I get a lot of flack about that when people, write about me or, I get challenged about it a lot because, as they say, there's no evidence. If you go onto a plastic surgeon's website, though, there's no evidence to link it. But for me, I was a very healthy girl. I got these implants. I got very sick. I had them taken out, and I started to get better. I did get diagnosed with lupus. And lupus, there is some... some studies that are out there now that actually do link an autoimmune response. And the FDA's own scientists found a link between an autoimmune response and implants. But that none of that's being done now because the manufacturers don't have to follow through with the research they were supposed to do. But lupus can be triggered by chemicals.
Okay.
I do not have a family history of lupus, so it was interesting for me to get diagnosed with lupus.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a snowflake disease. Everybody is different, but there's discoid lupus, which is the external form, and systemic, which is what I have, which is the internal form. And the organ, kidney failure, rheumatoid arthritis, Sjogren's syndrome, which is a collagen disorder, sun sensitivity, photosensitivity, rashes. swelling of your heart lining, chronic fatigue, your hair falling out, a rash across your face, the butterfly rash across your nose and cheeks. Those are all symptoms of lupus.
Oh. So now, have you overcome? What do you do to get through? How do you handle lupus?
Well, I'm actually in remission, and I have to tell you, since I had my implants removed, my health has gotten better and better and better the farther away I get from that. And I've done a lot of detox as well, because my implants completely ruptured in my system. There was nothing left of the outer shell. There was just this gelatinous mass being held by scar tissue in my chest. So my body had access to all of these chemicals, and I have had, you know, things pulled out of my body, hard little nodules and you know, it travels into your lymph systems. People have had silicone removed from their lymph glands and stuff. So I deal with it by now detoxing, being careful about what I eat. I don't go into the triggers. I don't go in the sun. I wear big hats, get bigger every year. I wear sunscreen clothes. I rest. You know, you try and stay away from stress and knowing, you know, what can trigger a flare-up.
Yeah.
But I deal with pain every day. You know, it's never, for me, it's never like, will I be in pain today? It's how much pain will I be in? Because I have fibromyalgia is a symptom of lupus as well.
Horrible, yeah. Now, I know that you you have a gorgeous 20-year-old daughter, Sydney.
She's beautiful.
She is beautiful. I saw pictures of her. She's gorgeous, like her mom. Tell me, though, I know that Sydney had some health challenges. Was this part and parcel of what you were going through?
Well, hers were different. And, you know, I'm not sure because I never took her into any kind of extreme testing because it was so invasive. But there are a lot of children who have, you know, they don't have an implant to remove. But we know from Dow's earlier studies that certain silicones cross the placental barrier.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. And then the National Milk Banking Association will not take breast milk from women who have breast implants. So I guess they must have known something we didn't. And I did try and breastfeed, and then I also, you know, just being, you know, pregnant. And so I don't know if her health issues were directly related to them, but a lot of the children had very similar issues.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And
there's no
research being done on the children, and there's no research being done for implants themselves, really. So the children have been kind of lost in the mix. So I don't really know, but I do suspect because other women's children had the same issues with this.
Yeah, and yet with all of the, you know, especially with the new knowledge going on, you still see the implants being done on the younger celebrities, the younger girls, and even the girls that aren't in the limelight. This is what they want because they are still seeing it. We're still being inundated by the TV shows that the big boobies are still, that's what you need.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the general population now. You know, it's everybody wants that look and to be a star. And with all the reality programming, and there's so much support for it. Yeah, I mean, you figure how long implants have been around, and most men don't even know what a real breast looks like. I mean, even young boys, they're used to looking at Victoria's Secret, and you've got all these hardened ledges, you know, in these women's breasts. They've cut like a ledge that will fall off around the implant, and that's what we'll...
Maybe their hope is it would be like it's their beer holder. I don't know. Maybe that's what their hope is. The perfect woman, hold my beer for me. That's great. So tell us, what is life like for you now? What positive has come out of all of these health struggles for you?
I believe everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. And while I never wanted to be a poster girl for a bad boob job, it has brought most incredible people into my life, the amazing, powerful women that I have lobbied Congress with. And I have become a citizen activist for women's health issues, and I've been able to help people learn about lupus. So, you know, that's the silver lining. And I wrote the book, and in sharing my story and having people, wonderful people, write me letters every day about how it has touched them, it has brought meaning to my life. That is aside, you know, from the Waltons. And when I lead workshops and when I coach with people on the phone every day and help people rebalance their lives. It has been incredibly rewarding. My life is great. I'm very, very blessed. I'm a really lucky girl. And yeah, yes, some dreams were lost, but other dreams have come true. I have a great husband. I have a wonderful dog. And I have three great daughters. I have wonderful daughters who have a really great sense of themselves. And they don't want
breast implants. Do any of them want? They don't. No. Have they ever thought about it? Because how old are the girls? One is 20. Sydney's 20.
Yeah, and my stepdaughters are 20 and 18.
Okay.
And Kylie and Robin, and they, you know, they're very, you know, they've all gone through their issues, you know, and continue to do about being female and about what they look like and about, you know, their own, creating their own image, you know, what they are, the way they dress. They're very different in their styles. And when I see my own daughter go through it, sometimes I'm heartbroken. I think, wait a minute, didn't I tell you? I'm the living example of what you shouldn't be. But, you know, but everybody has their own stuff to go through. But they certainly are very aware. They really don't like that whole anything that's fake. They have a great sense of themselves.
Isn't that great?
We're lucky for that.
Yeah, yeah. If anyone is considering cosmetic surgeries, and they can email you or, you know, send something out to your website, what would you say to them?
Well, I do. I have people write me. My website is marymcdonough.com, and there's a whole segment in there called In the Know, which is a group that I had started. And you can read other people's stories and ask questions. I'd say really be with yourself inside and know what your motivation is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something, you know, if it's something that you can work with, you know, because people think, oh, she's anti-implant. I'm not anti-implant. I'm pro-information. Know that you may never get a clean mammogram. You're going to have to pay for extra angles to be shot with an implant. Your mammogram may rupture your implant. If you have a history of breast cancer in your family, early detection is key, and you may not find it with an implant in place because it's opaque and it can block part of the breast tissue. Know that you're going to have to pay for them for the rest of your life to be, you know, redone every 7 to 9 years. And then sometimes you can lose health care coverage, in America at least, because you have had an implant, and anything that happens because of it won't ever be covered. Some people have been completely lost coverage. They won't take you into their plan if you have had breast implants. And just really know the inner reasons of why you're doing it. And if you're doing it for somebody else, or you're doing it for some, you know, pointing to some other reason, then really sit with that and figure out if there's another way that you can achieve that sense of self-esteem or that feeling good about yourself without doing it.
Now, did you, when you met your husband now, the love of your life, right?
Yes.
When you met him now, did you have the breast implants or you didn't?
I did not, no.
You didn't.
I've had my
okay.
implants out for 17 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I had scars and stuff but
yeah,
when I met
yeah.
him, so that, you
well,
know. That's
what I was going to ask you. I mean, there must be some sort of, there's some damage there, you know, and probably some loss. I know that they say that there is loss of sensitivity and whatnot. I mean, so you have to come to the table with this saying, you know what, I had this, but now I don't. How do you feel about that?
It is. It really eliminates, you know, certain kinds of people out of your life, you know. And my husband is great, and he didn't care at all. I mean, it was such a non-issue for him, and that's part of what makes him really a great man.
Yeah.
I had someone stop dating me once because I have lupus.
Yeah. Oh.
I just said I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it at all. And so you really need to, you know, you need to bring what you have to the table and say, here's my life. And everybody has their baggage. And I guess, as you know, they say you've got to find someone whose baggage is compatible with yours, that matches yours. Like I have blue luggage, and oh, black and blue go well together. Great.
Liz and Mary, your journey is so inspiring. We're actually at the end of our show. I can't believe it. It went by so fast.
I can't believe it.
I know. I've got to have you. You've got to come back on. You know I'm moving over to another station. We'll talk about that. I know we can get your book on your website. I want to make sure everyone gets out there. I don't think there's any woman out there who hasn't gone through body image and self-doubt, so pick up this wonderful book. Mary, thank you so much for being here and inspiring our listeners. You are as sweet as Erin always was, and you've certainly become a wonderful Mary.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You are a blessing. And I know Mary knows who my next week's guest is, because next week, Thursday, June 21st, our special guest will be Alison Arngrim. So you remember Alison as little Nellie Olson on the series Little House on the Prairie? Well, she's all grown up now, too. She's written a wonderful book, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson, Learned to Love Being Hated. So we're going to have so much fun with Alison next week. That brings our show to a close. I want to remind everybody to be an organ donor. Go to www.beadonor.ca. Pick up the latest issue of SNAP for all the information going on in your community. I hope that we brought a smile to you today and you took back something that will really make you think. Hope everyone has a great day, and we will see you next week. Take care, everyone.